This episode of The Unwind is brought to you by Audible. Get your free audiobook download and free 30-day trial by going to audibletrial.com/rolltohit.
Testing.
Oh, wow. That's
Yeah?
What?
Ooh.
Yeah, it's fine.
The bewitching hour is upon us. All right. We're good to go. Wow, I haven't done this intro in a while.
Yeah, he's so much louder now. I guess when I listen to it.
Oh, Sean.
What?
I don't know.
We gotta go, man. I'm melting.
Let's
go.
What are you waiting for? Do you want the AC?
I wanna go.
No, we gotta go. No, we gotta go. You ready?
No, I'm just saying, next time we should probably turn on the
AC. Next time we should just start right now.
What up, nerds? Welcome to episode 43 of The Unwind, a weekly show where we talk about tech, games, gadgets, and geek culture. My name is Rob Steller.
I'm Sean Thomas.
And I'm Josiah Hills.
We're back. It's been a little bit of a break.
What up?
I know. It's good to see you guys.
I know. You missed us.
I know. Yeah. Obviously, we're not on video this time because it is way too damn hot in my apartment.
Yeah.
And
do
that
you guys like
possible.
Sweat?
Oh, my God. It's bad. It is bad. So, I downloaded Windows 10.
Windows 10.
Yeah. I mean, I've had it on my Surface for like 3 months.
Don't you mean Windows 9?
Yeah, don't start. 7, 8, 9. We went over this.
I'm more of a Windows 98.
So I finally put it on my desktop, and I'm not the only one who did it. In the first 24 hours after Windows 10 was released, over 14 million downloads occurred. And now I think they're up to, that's only been a week, right? Not even. Yeah. And it's,
how many computers are at Microsoft HQ?
Not 14 million. I mean, they've already they're about 20 now, I think, which is absolutely insane.
Making it free is awesome, and I think people are actually excited. Like, it seems good. I think people weren't sure about Windows 8, and I think Windows 10 is actually good.
Well, I've heard it's good, but it's buggy.
Exactly.
Like, people are saying it's got a lot of potential. Yep. Obviously, it's better than some of the missteps they took in 8 and even 8.1. But it's still a little buggy, is what I hear.
But they're moving away from Patch Tuesday. Do you hear about this? They're not doing it anymore. So it's just continual rollout of fixes, which is good.
Yeah, you can fix bugs. I mean, there are a lot of rollouts that have been buggy in the past. As long as you can fix them, I mean. And I heard they pushed up the release date. I heard they were trying to think of more of a fall date, and for whatever reason, they pushed it maybe before.
It would make
back
sense because that's when the phone side of it's coming out, which is now you got to wait another 2 months for, which is kind of weird.
Because if you do it in October, you don't. I guess you do it in October, you can get the Christmas sales, but you can't get the back to school.
I don't know. But yeah. Anyway, let's dive right in. Next. Let's start.
All
right.
So first topic I want to talk about is doping in esports. So ESL, Electronic Sports League. Yeah, ESL. Yeah. Or English as a second language.
Yeah. Did you do it?
So they recently announced that they would be exploring and soon announcing policies against using drugs when playing esports, specifically not so much like crank or meth. I think that's probably going to have a negative effect on your performance
they'll get their APM up.
But so it's not so much for like an ethical reason, right? Like a moral reason, like drugs are bad, okay? But more like, you know, there's a performance enhancement. So in this case, the performance enhancement drug of choice is basically things like Ritalin or Adderall, which are psychostimulants and kind of calm your nerves, help you take in more information a little faster, that sort of thing. Pay attention for longer spans of time. So, first, I wanted to throw this out there. What do you guys think? What's your gut reaction? Do you see any problems with this? I see a few problems with this. Do you think it's on the right track?
Yeah, I mean, it's always an issue when it comes to competition, especially when you start talking about all the money that's involved, right? And esports has grown tremendously over the past few years.
International is past 17 million.
Yeah,
right?
I think the winning team makes it like well over like in million,
I think
right?
The sixth place
every member on the team will be a millionaire.
Is that what it is?
I think it's close to that. I don't know exactly.
I had heard the sixth place team will make more than $1 million, the team itself.
Yeah.
So I could yeah, see number
so,
one.
I mean, when you start talking about stakes that are that high, obviously there are just people who want to get an edge and want to, you know, try to game the system or get whatever advantage they can get, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's definitely a conversation that we need to have, you know, especially now that, I mean, it's funny, like, we're almost at the point where these players are role models, right? Like any other athlete. Yeah, I mean, right. You're starting to see broadcasts on TV. I think ESPN3 had one of the big tournaments recently. Yeah. And so, I mean,
sports bars to show it.
These people are, you know, being more and more pushed in the spotlight. And I think that this has to be something that's addressed.
But again, I'm not sure it's from an ethics thing. You know, it may be a sense of fairness and but I think they want legitimacy. So from that standpoint, I think it's almost like a reactionary thing, right? Like a reflex reaction that, oh, well, people were taking drugs. We can't let our athletes take drugs or e-athletes take drugs. But Sean, I want to hear what you say, and then I'll try to explain where I'm coming from.
Well, I really like drugs, so I'm against this. No, well, first off, I want to say
that's how you always beat me at StarCraft.
Yeah, I can't wait for the Sports Center segment where they make fun of this, because it clearly makes sense, but I could see the rest of the sports world just piling on more. It's funny because esports, some people have a problem with that idea of even calling it sports.
Yeah.
And but this, I mean, it is a real thing. You have to think about that. Getting performance-enhancing drugs out of tournaments, I can't see that as a bad thing, but I don't know how they're going to regulate this. Like, have they decided what about kids who actually have ADD?
Yeah, exactly. That's one of my concerns, right? So how do they manage this, and how do they, you know, because it's, I don't want to say it's easy, but it's much easier to get a diagnosis of ADHD and get this stuff prescribed, let alone to, you know, have it available on the black market per pill. Mm-hmm. Like, kids do this already. Mm-hmm. And so I would say ADHD is much easier to fake than chronic pain and getting something like Oxycontin or codone or whatever.
I mean, I had a friend who just went on ZocDoc and looked for the reviews that said he likes to dispense drugs, and you just go there and it's just a lot easier.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't even need to try that hard.
Yeah, exactly. So you just get that prescription and share it with the ESL and say, yeah, what? You know, I need this.
Well, yeah, I mean, also, have they, I don't know, was this in reaction to something specific in that they really saw the difference in terms of players who may have been taking Adderall or something like that versus, like, have they looked at the differences in how much it can improve their performance?
I don't think there's been any quantitative study, but it's a...
I want to be that guy whose PhD thesis is on DOTA.
Well, I mean, so there's definitely a perceived boost, and so that could be strong enough for a placebo effect in and of itself. If I think this is going to make me play better, I take it, and therefore I play better. It's that self-fulfilling prophecy. Because, I mean, this is a fairly, I don't want to say common, but it's not unheard of to find out that kids in high school and in college are taking Adderall before tests and stuff like that.
Right.
So there's at least that perception, you know, like some people I used to wrestle, and people would be like, oh, I need a Mountain Dew before, before my match. I'm like, dude, you're going to throw up.
I love all the Sprite commercials where they're playing basketball. They're like, yeah, power up with Sprite. I'm like, yeah, you really want a sugary drink right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. And I've heard it works. I have a lot of friends who took Adderall, especially during like grad school, where it's much more intense than high school biology, and they could study for much longer periods of time and concentrate. I just wonder, I mean, I guess, but this is the same thing as steroids in sports. When you're at that level, I wonder if you're already overcoming any of those differences that would make up for. I mean, I guess you can maybe practice for longer points, or you'll be alert for longer times. But I also wonder, you know, how does that involve
caffeine? Does this mean that my shitty grades in college mean more since I didn't use drugs? Like,
yes, that's what you can tell yourself.
So that means all the kids who got A's, I can just assume that they were, you know, using Adderall or some other form of drug to get their grades, and that just disqualifies them.
You were using
from
the wrong
better.
Kind of drug. You were using the one that slows you down.
You're supposed to be using gonna have to have a like an asterisk besides all C's and D's that you made. But you know, you bring up the other point that I wanted to get into, which is something like steroids, right? So steroids, clearly that's banned and that's not a good thing in more traditional athletic events, right? But why is it not a good thing? Is it because, one, it gives you a performance boost, which is kind of cheating. Mm-hmm. But then you could say, well, just make sure everybody takes it, right?
Free but drugs the problem, for everybody.
The problem with steroids specifically, which is kind of the original, I don't want to say original, but that's like, you know, in modern sports, professional sports, that was kind of the original threat. The problem is with that is it has negative effects, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So there are several documented medical effects that are negative coming from long-term use of steroids. Roid rage, for one, back acne, that's terrible. We don't want everybody to have back acne.
Nope.
But, you know, there are serious health effects leading to, you know, your heart, et cetera, if you take steroids for a long term, right? So with other drugs, like Adderall, perhaps, is there a negative effect? And if there's no negative effect, then why can't we say all our athletes take Adderall if they want to?
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't think about it from that because, you know, what was the impetus for starting performance-enhancing drug banning? I mean, it seems it's tough in my head to say that they were doing it just to protect their players. But you're right, though. I mean, I guess if everybody take that.
You know, and the other piece of this is something
we're gonna
like...
We're going to turn into Mutant League. We're
all
like, well, why not? I mean, are you not entertained? Right? Yeah, that's the whole point. And then the other piece, like, you know, I'll bring it up. Lance Armstrong with some of the doping that he was doing, right? Like, those were not necessarily deleterious drugs, right? Like, especially, I forget what they call it, blood doping, right? So you take out a pint of your blood a month before your performance, and then you put back your own blood, and you have a higher oxygen red blood cell count so you can get more oxygen. And literally, that's completely natural, right? It's literally your own blood, and that's illegal. Right. But if everybody could afford to do that, if all your athletes could afford to do that, then why not do that if it gives a better performance? Right. So I'm trying to just get into this kind of metaphysical conversation about what is fair. And I agree. I think most people want their sporting events to be fair. But removing something is not the only way to make it fair. Making sure everybody has access to it can also mean that it's fair.
So, yeah, I mean...
And if there's no negative effect, why not? Why shouldn't everybody have access to it? Everybody wears a cup in baseball. If you weren't wearing a cup, you'd be at a severe disadvantage. But everybody wears a cup.
I think the thing, it goes back to what you were saying before in legitimacy. And, I mean, having this, it just has bad optics versus... Like you said, a cup. I think there, for whatever reason, the way people view these kind of drugs, even if we prove that there's no negative long-term effect, I think people see that as, because you don't say like a cup is protecting yourself, whereas that is improving your performance. I just think as you grow as a sport and things like that, I think it ends up being more of a marketing thing and an aspect of People don't want to see a situation where everybody is on something because then it feels fake. It feels less real.
I get that. And you know, I'm by now, hopefully you realize I'm kind of playing devil's advocate here. But, I mean, if you go back to something like the stuff that Lance Armstrong was doing, by many accounts, everybody was still doing
cycling is
what
bad.
He was doing.
It was very
and
bad.
He was still tearing it up. So it's not just... You know, I couldn't do blood doping and beat Lance Armstrong in a race. That's not happening. I can train for 6 years and still,
we don't know this.
And he could just be walking in the park, you know, and I could challenge him after blood doping and I still wouldn't beat him, right?
Sure.
So there's still a lot of training, a lot of experience, a lot of know-how, et cetera, and mental determination that went into his wins, whether they have an asterisk or not. Or whether they've been removed by the governing body of that sport. So I don't know. I just think that sometimes we need to challenge our norms, because we are getting to that point. I mean, if you've ever seen Gattaca, right? Like God babies versus designer babies, mm-hmm. this concept, we're getting there soon. We're going to be there, whether by drugs, whether by some kind of cyborg enhancement, Rob, or whether by genetic alteration, we're going to have people who have significant advantages over others. And up until this point, the only advantage that you've had beyond your inborn genetics was money. Right. And we know that does a lot of shit, too.
I mean, they already had, do you remember with Oscar Pistorius, he had, so for those who don't know, he's a runner, but he his legs are
double
amputated.
Amputee, yeah.
So he has, I guess, the blades, I think they're called, the fake legs, I guess. But since they have springs in them, it makes him faster in some ways. So people are arguing that that should be illegal because he's getting the enhancement from that. If you
just
have
a separate league for everything where everything's legal. You can do whatever
the Adderall
hell you
league
want.
And the-
no, you can just do like whatever drugs you want to pump in your body and it becomes Mutant League and it's amazing because that was one of the best games
Smash
that ever
TV.
Came out. Yeah, I mean, like, I think there has to be, there could
but
be both.
That gets scary because then it turns, it almost feels like Gladiator. Like, I feel like that leads to, at some point, it's just to the death. Like, I don't know why. That, I feel
I've
like
always said that would
to.
Be awesome.
Esports to the death. Yeah.
I don't know why.
Start bleeding.
Somehow Dota turns into, but I genuinely, I don't, maybe we can in the future. I think there's something that people don't approve of. Like, it's totally right. Cycling is full of dopers. I mean, I could have sworn there was one Tour de France where like the top 10 were disqualified.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's that, if you don't know about it, you're okay with it. But if you know more about it, and it's in the
but
same
But at what so, point does it become a slippery slope, though? You start allowing a certain, you know, like one thing, then you're like, oh, okay, well, they've been doing this, so let's try this now. Like, I mean, at what point does it stop?
So, I mean, that's a good question. I think to answer that, we have to kind of come to terms with, do we want to watch tradition or do we want to watch the best performance? Mm-hmm. Because if you want to watch the best performance, you would let some of this new stuff in, right? Like we could talk about golf, and some of the clubs are ridiculous with the carbon fiber clubs and all that stuff. It's nuts. I'm not saying these guys aren't great and they haven't practiced the heck out of these golf courses and their swings and stuff like that, but with those clubs, if they had to do that with old-fashioned clubs or old-fashioned tennis rackets or whatever, you know, the performance would be a lot less than what it is now. On top of that, they've got personal trainers, personal dietitians, et cetera, et cetera. So it's almost like I suspect, like, do we have a bias, you know, against certain types of performance enhancements that if as long as they are available to everybody and not causing negative effects. I mean, you could argue that, like, just playing sport of football gives you negative effects.
Yeah.
Look at boxers after they retire. I mean,
so let me throw this out. Just one more thing, right? So to test this bias. So if it weren't drugs, right, we could talk about some other mechanical or electronic advantage, right? Because we already let them bring in their own keyboards and mice, et cetera, right? Equipment. So what if they wore like, diapers with plumbing so they could just pee and poo right there at the table and never had to get up?
Can I have that?
Yeah.
That sounds amazing.
So, I mean, would we allow for that, right? Like, because I'm sure if you've got to pee in the middle of a match, that's going to affect your performance. But if you could just let it go, man.
Well, I think during long races, like for
Formula One.
Yeah, yeah. I think they have systems for that, don't they?
They have still suits, probably.
So I think it goes back to, I don't know how the optics would be, because it feels, you know, it feels like if it was an e-sport, you'd be like, you can get up. But
there's no pausing. I know it's kind of silly, but I'm just throwing it out there, right? Like, is there a bias versus mechanical versus chemical?
I think from the perspective of viewers, I think there is a bias against chemical, but it doesn't always work that way. Like, for example, we said Oscar Pistorius also swimming. They banned some swimsuits because they were too not aerodynamic, whatever, hydrodynamic
fluid.
So it almost feels like in my head, this is completely anecdotal, but viewers are against chemical,
yeah,
and maybe governing bodies might be more looking at both because they understand a little bit more.
Yeah, so I mean, look at next week's look topic, at fighting games, though. I mean,
do we not understand science in this country?
I mean, look at fighting games, though. Like, you bring your own your gamepad,
yeah,
right? But
yeah,
there are things that you can and can't do when you make modifications.
They're regulated, right?
So yeah. I mean, it's still, you know, I think there's just, you have to figure out where that line is and then just stick with it, right?
Can you have ones with turbo buttons? Or, you know, the ones where it'll constantly click?
Yeah, I don't know.
I would assume
I don't know.
Not, right?
Probably not, but yeah.
That would be crazy.
Yeah.
Punch.
All right, so let's move on to the second topic. So recently, I know it's been a little while now, but Satoru Iwata passed away at the age of 55. He was the president of Nintendo since 2002 and a longtime game developer. Worked on, I think, Kirby, Pokemon, Super Smash Bros. Like, a lot of just iconic games.
And for those who don't know, Nintendo's only had two presidents. I believe he's the second one. So
I think he was the third.
Was he the third? Was it before when
He was the first that wasn't related to the family.
Oh, the family, okay.
Yeah.
Still, either way, sure. The point is they're not in a roulette of
correct.
Right. I mean, he's been there for 13, 14 years now, right? And you know, he's kind of famous in the sense that he came through the entire system. Like, he started from the bottom and worked his way up, right? So he had a famous quote saying that on my business card, I'm a corporate president. In my mind, I'm a game developer, but in my heart, I'm a gamer. And I think every time you saw him talk, I think he always did like GDC and some of the bigger conferences.
And then he started the whole, Nintendo Direct.
But I think every time he spoke, like, you could really tell that he just loved what he, like, making games. And, you know, that really came through in his vision. He also, like,
he was really personable. Like,
yeah. And he was just a visionary too. I mean, Nintendo under him went in a very different direction than a lot of the other big gaming companies.
He spearheaded the Wii and the 3DS, which are two of the biggest hits they've ever had.
Yeah.
So
I wanted to talk about, you know, seeing
that. Sorry, I think it was the DS, not the 3DS.
Right.
Yeah.
Get your shit together, man. But anyway, so I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, there's two very different types of CEOs, right? You have of these tech companies, right? You have CEOs who were developers and, like, worked their way up or had a startup that got big. Or you have somebody who's from the corporate world and has a very business mindset. So I wanted to ask you, you know, what are the pros and cons of having those two types in the leading roles?
Yeah, well, you know, a while ago I read the Steve Jobs biography, and he would talk about it in terms of business person and product person, right? Mm-hmm. So you don't necessarily, because Steve Jobs wasn't like the best programmer or engineer or whatever, but mm-hmm. he clearly identified with the product that his company was selling. And so I think it kind of boils down to that. Like, do you know the product and your customer base versus are you an artful and skilled business executive? And, you know, definitely as a consumer, I appreciate product people much, much more. But it can be frustrating because if they are too much of a product person and can't figure out the business end of it or balance that somehow, then we don't get enough good products or they have to compromise on their products or they don't have the longevity of a brand that I'd like to see continue. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, no, definitely. I mean, you see companies, I mean, it's really just, I think most people like the idea of having a product as a head because they're invested in the product, they like the product, and it feels, you know, especially when you're talking about such consumer-facing businesses, video games, consumer electronics. I mean, if you're the head of a bank, I think you're okay with, you know, some kind of just
you gotta love
person.
Money.
So, like, but there are certain positions or even whatever, head of Exxon, they don't need to be obsessed with oil or know so much about how a rigging works. But when you're doing stuff that's so consumer-facing, it's nice to be led by a product person who knows what they're doing. And, you know, well, you brought up Jobs, and so Tim Cook is there now, and he was the supply chain guy. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, Apple continues to do record-breaking numbers after record-breaking numbers. And they're clearly not doing poorly, but I will say I can't – maybe the MacBook, but I feel like in their recent products – none of them blew me away like, say, the iPhone. I would say the iPhone 4 the MacBook Air and the iPad, I guess, too. I don't know if there were any product of the new ones they put out recently. I guess you could say the 6 Plus, the watch, that really felt like, this is so much better than everything else. And and I can't say completely that that was because Jobs is gone, because, I mean, they've still got so many people there. But there's just, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I think you kind of hit on it when you're talking about bank executives and oil, right? So those types of companies are effectively commodities, right? Like, how do you differentiate your product from another other than price?
Yeah.
Right? So it's just so common that, you know, like, you know, the original commodities are things like gold and wheat. And like, how do you say my wheat is so much better as long as it gets to a point where it doesn't have bugs or fungus in it? You know, so it's a commodity. And you talk about like the iPhone 4. And after that, you know, it's a lot of these smartphones started to become commodities. How do you differentiate? Mm-hmm. So I think it would have been hard for Steve Jobs to continue that. But I agree that, you know, Cook is not he's not as much of a product guy. I think he does have a lot of passion for Apple as a company and as a culture, a company culture, that sort of thing. But yeah, it's clear he's not a product guy. He doesn't have the kind of consumer vision that Steve Jobs was famous for and notorious for sometimes.
Yeah, I think that's what's interesting about the game industry too, is that you have all these indie studios, which are basically just a handful of developers who are, you know, gamers at the core, love what they're doing, had an idea for a game and are developing it.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's a huge risk because they don't have the business side of it.
Yeah.
And you've seen plenty of games who were mismanaged, you know, didn't have that PR and that community relations that, you know, you really need as one of these companies to be successful.
PR or the discipline, right?
Yeah.
To like stay on target, meet your deadlines.
Yeah.
Because that can burn through your consumer excitement and your customer base, right? Or, you know, stay on message, don't overpromise. Peter Molyneux was famous for this, and like he's kind of a joke now. Like nobody listens to him. And
some say he's still talking and no one
You know, and it's sad because he did knock it out of the park with a few games back in the day.
Yeah.
And he still has good ideas, but I mean and related, Kickstarter is where all of this happens. I feel so much of it. It's people who have good intentions, good ideas, but they don't realize how difficult it is, especially physical products. Like software, you can still build, but some physical products, I mean, just getting manufacturing teams together, getting supply right, it's so incredibly difficult. And you hear, although I've actually heard that on the whole, Kickstarter is still pretty successful, on par, maybe even slightly better than a lot of VC-backed stuff, but you still hear a lot of projects that don't go anywhere because they just underestimated how difficult it was.
Yeah. And even industry experienced people, you know, we were talking about Schaefer, right?
Yeah, Tim Schaefer.
With Broken Age, like people were really disappointed. Goddess with Peter Molyneux, you know, all these great ideas. And it just fell flat. They finally released a product, but it didn't have everything they wanted it to have. It was past the announced release date, et cetera. And people just were really not having it. So that's a case where, you know, you've got to edit, you've got to temper your desire, your vision with reality. And that's the thing that, you know, Steve Jobs was really famous at bending, right? Like he could get people to do impossible things because he would not relent on his vision, but he still made people get it done. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, you know, the way he managed, his management style was, I don't think I personally could work in it. But the other big thing he did was make sure he had people who could be successful under that management style. And he was not afraid to fire people. So the people that were left could be motivated by him screaming and shouting at them and so forth. But, you know, he's one of the exceptions where he could stick to his vision, but get people to do it and stay on deadline or spin it enough that nobody knew they were off deadline. Mm-hmm.
And I think one thing that helps that so much is when you genuinely believe in your product.
Right.
Like you can see this a lot of in startups too. When they really do see this is like, I'm not just doing this to, you know, get somebody to buy us out in a year or two. Like I believe in what this does. And so like, I mean, in my ideal company, I think the two basic ways you could structure it would be either have a product head and a business advisor, or a business head and a creative advisor. Yeah. And I would probably have product head and have a good CFO. I mean, I guess you could always do co-CEOs, and I know it worked out really well for BlackBerry. So,
yeah, but I mean, I think you touched on it. Like, it's important, you know, it's tough for smaller companies when you only have five people who are all core to the development of some products to find money, or, you know, just to find somebody who's willing to put in the time, who has this experience with the business side of it.
Yeah. I mean, that's another thing. A lot of creatives don't want to do this business.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
That's perfect example. So Nintendo, I mean, Miyamoto, I mean, he has so much respect. I mean, everybody loves Miyamoto. He could have been the president easily, but he doesn't, he said specifically, he does not want to take on this. Yeah. He wants to be creative building games. He does not.
Yeah, and it's good that he recognizes that's not his forte. And you're right, like a lot of young businesses, startups, just never get off the ground because they don't have the business acumen. You look at something like restaurants are the most commonly failed business. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The average restaurant will exist for 3 years and then disappear into the ether because they can't be run business-wise. And almost all of those are passion projects. Yeah. If you just think about what it takes, you know, it's this guy, this person, this lady, they love cooking. They've got some amazing recipes. Everybody compliments them on their cooking, whatever it is. And they're like, I want to own a restaurant, or, you know, or you have
there's
so
seven
many.
Seven Italian restaurants in town. We could use another. Yeah.
And even you have all these, you know, rich people that got rich doing other things, all these sports athletes and stuff like that. And they're like, oh, I want to open a restaurant because I love eating. I love the atmosphere and all this. And then it fails, and they're rich.
It's funny that you say that, because my brother's first boss, they had a startup. They sold it to VeriSign for like $20, $25 million, and then they just moved to Dallas and opened up a pizza place because that's what they always wanted to do. Yeah, of course. I don't know if it's still there, but, you know.
The odds say no if it was three years ago.
I mean, I think, you know, we're kind of in consensus that it's important to have that balance for, you know, to have the best shot at being successful. It's important to have both sides of it. Although we seem to all be in agreement that we like having those product minded people,
the product and the creativity. Cause I'm, well, to just bring it back to the argument I was making before, a good CFO is a commodity almost, right? Yeah. There's so many people who went to business school and they should know how to run a business, but the creativity, the product people, Those are rarities.
All right, so let's move on to the break. So we have a question of the week that's brought to you by Audible. Josiah, have you been listening to anything recently?
I've been listening to three things at the same time, unusual for me.
He actually listens to all three simultaneously, like, all coming through the speakers at once.
Now we're talking about performance enhancing drug before.
I'll say the least embarrassing thing right now, which is
My Little Pony.
I'm listening to the Necronomicon, which is compilation of stuff by H.P. Lovecraft. Yep. So he wrote all this stuff about Cthulhu and everything, and it's really interesting. And it's really racist. So there's a cat that happens to be a tuxedo cat, which, if you don't know about cats, are black and white. And this cat is called N-Man. When I was listening to it, it didn't dawn on me until maybe 5 minutes into the story. I thought the guy was saying knicker. As in Knickerbocker. I was like, oh, Knicker Man. That's cute. No, wait, that's not it at all. This is awful.
That's not his name.
Oh, man, I didn't know that.
So, but, you know, if you judge it by when it was written, it's still really interesting horror stories and really kind of innovative in a way. Unfortunately, racist. But I take the point of view where I don't want to erase that from history. So if somebody thought it was interesting and good for some reason at a time, then let's look at it and we accept those negative things and deal with them in a way. So,
you know what's a good addendum to H.P. Lovecraft? Bloodborne.
Oh, God. So if you wanted to listen to, you know, some of this slightly racist literature, or there are many other books that you can get if that's not your thing, you can
get uncensored, apparently.
You can get a free audiobook and free 30-day trial. It also helps us bring higher quality content to you guys, but you can find that by going to audibletrial.com/rolltohit. And our question of the week in honor of Iwata is, what is your favorite Nintendo game?
Well,
so we're talking games published and developed by Nintendo?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. As opposed to ones on the
on their platform. Systems. Yeah.
Okay. So for me, it's got to be Zelda Ocarina of Time. I mean, so I didn't actually play it on the N64 because I had a PlayStation. I ended up playing it on an emulator that I fully backed up from the cartridge I own because I bought all the dumping equipment to put it onto my computer. But the puzzles were great. I mean, you don't really go into Zelda for the story, but it's simple enough that you can understand what they're doing, going back in time and switching it's between young Link and older Link. I mean, not the first time they've done that, but it was one of the earlier open world games, even though it wasn't completely open world, but getting to call Epona to come whenever I needed to get around because I was going too slowly. Ocarina of Time was great. It's a classic.
Yeah. There you go.
I've said before that I don't really love Nintendo's IP and their games.
Shame.
I've played some version of all of their major platforms, you know. So I've played a version of Metroid. I've played a version of Mario, Smash
Which one?
Brothers.
Which Metroid?
I forget which one.
Which one ruined you, Josiah?
None of them caught my
Battletoads
attention.
Battletoads ruined
I wouldn't say
everyone.
They ruined me. Just never caught my attention. Super Metroid. I kind of hate platformers. I've played, you know, Pokemon, all that stuff. I like some of their characters, but their games just never really caught me. I will say that when I had a Super Nintendo, I did purchase Star Fox. I think that's literally the only Nintendo game that I purchased that was not bundled with the console. And I do have a soft spot for that one. And so I am kind of excited that they're relaunching it. So
Josiah's been doing barrel rolls around the house.
In a pig suit.
So I'm going to have to go. So Nintendo is just very good at making characters. And there's a lot of characters in my game, which is Pokemon. I mean, I don't even know how many hours I spent. Like every single trip that we went on. I mean, I think Pokemon's the only handheld game, that series. I think the only series that's gotten me into playing games on.
How many hours do you spend on Gold and Silver? The one we were playing together.
I played it before, and then whatever. Sean's still bitter about that, but that's only because he cheated. You traded to get the starting ones. Don't even lie about that.
I did not.
Whatever.
I did not
so,
do such a thing.
Anyway, so Pokemon is also. Side note: did you see in Games Done Quick this summer? They did a speed run to catch all 151 Pokemon.
I didn't see it. Was it good?
Yeah, I watched.
How do you do that? Because it's all random.
Oh,
right?
It's all glitch based. I mean, it's crazy though how these guys do these glitch games. But
do they catch missing number?
Yeah, it's all. I think so. No, I don't know if that counts. But it was all under 2 hours, which is like crazy.
Wow.
But anyway, so I can't.
Yeah, wait, how did they catch the starting three?
I don't know. I didn't get that far on it yet.
Huh.
But there's glitches to do everything, Sean. That's amazing. Crazy. But anyway, so yeah, that's been my favorite handheld game of all time. Like, I got into the cards, I got into the TV show. I mean, I just have a very, very soft spot for for Pokemon.
And not to keep going on this, but can we just say how amazing it is that they are the most iterative company ever, and yet I still, for me at least, I haven't gotten sick of them. I mean, I'm tired of like God of War after the second one, and we're on.
How many Marios have there been?
Pokemon, Mario, even Metroid had a bunch, Zelda, all of them have like 5 to 10 games in the series.
Yeah, that's a good point.
There's
multiple versions of Mario Paint
in
Mario World.
I mean, how many Yoshi games have there been? It's crazy. But
Mario Paper. It's like there's two or three versions.
There's a whole Mario Sports series and everything.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's a good point. It's impressive.
Anyway, let's move on to our last topic.
So not too long ago, there was a bit of a kerfuffle at Reddit.
Kerfuffle.
Yeah. Basically, a lot of people were against some of the decisions that Alan Powell made in terms of restricting what kind of subreddits exist and then things like this. And I don't want to get too mired in that whole debate, but related to that, I mean, it's clear that the reason why they did this, the reason why they were changing up the way that AMAs are working, is because they want to monetize Reddit. Reddit is still a huge, in terms of user base, uniques, and I don't know, attachment. People go there every month all the time, but it's not making much money, if any. And the AMA is their crown jewel. That's the one thing that everybody, I mean, Obama did an AMA while he was president. That's incredible. So
can I just say, I watched the Boondocks episode where Obama gets elected, like that whole, have you seen that one?
No, I don't think so.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Anyway, keep going.
Wow, how did I
just watched it last night. It was good. You mentioned Obama.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's making a cultural reference.
But so,
can I share my Obama story? No, I'm just messing.
Don't lie. Do you have an Obama story?
Yes, you can, Josiah.
This podcast won't ever hear it. It's too steamy.
Tune into our other podcast to hear what's next. So, you know, it's interesting to see. So this is this pretty much the reasons why they did these changes are because they know how much negative PR they get and they need to make more money off of it. Same thing, Imgur, we talked about it a few weeks back or maybe months. This the same reason why they started banning some not safe for work content was because they needed to monetize. And it kind of gets into, you know, for years, the way tech startups have been, VCs have been focused completely on growth. We want to see that you're growing users year over year, month over month, whatever. And they're not even really looking at the revenue stream with the hope that once you get enough users, we're going to find a way to monetize it. But the question is, I mean, how do you make money off these things? Twitter is going through this problem where they, I mean, they're huge in terms of mind share. I feel like Twitter's just as big, almost as big as Facebook, but they don't make even a fraction of the money that Facebook makes.
Well, let's just be clear. So mind share, it might seem like that to us because we're very tech centric and tech reporting, let alone regular reporting, is very Twitter focused. Right. So that's the type of circle we run in. But Twitter has maybe one quarter of the users. I think Facebook is over a billion now, a little over a billion. And Twitter has 300 million.
Sure. But I guess I should say then it's still a huge social media. Like if you're thinking of top. So I'm saying it's not something like Reddit, I would say, is significantly smaller than Twitter. So when you're looking at it, it almost seems amazing that a company can be that large, have that strong of a user base, and still not really be making that much money.
Yeah, because, I mean, on the back end, it takes a lot of server power. It takes a lot of brain power to make these databases and keep them running smoothly. I mean, you think about Twitter in its early stages, fail whale, right? When was the last time we saw a fail whale? But the first few years, it was nothing but fail whales, and it became a meme in that, you know, people thought it was cute, but also it's annoying as heck.
Right? You can't use Twitter.
But, you know, there's a lot of money that goes into making sure this stuff works like magic.
But so how do you think they can monetize it without turning off their user base? Because, you know, okay, if you make Twitter subscription-based, I mean, the key, so many of these products are free. Google can do this because that's not where they make their money. You know, Apple can sell their OS for free because that's not where they make their money, really. But how do these companies that are built purely on the web, it's a free service and I don't think you can say, okay, this subreddit you have to pay for. You have to pay to see these guys' tweets. How do you think they monetize it?
It's a tough question. I mean, it's a question that most startups who are, you know, free have to go through, right?
And
it's,
I thought you'd have the answer, though.
Well, obviously, clearly I don't, or else I'd be making a lot more than I do.
Well, actually,
right now.
Twitter's looking for a new CEO. So.
Yeah. I put my application in door.
Yeah.
and you know, so Twitter started doing the sponsored posts. They started doing, you know, I think that's primarily how they're doing it now, right? Most of their money is sponsored.
Yeah, I mean, it's ads.
It's sponsored ads.
Yeah, not like.
And so I don't use.
No banner ads.
I don't use Reddit, so like I don't know. I mean, they could use banner ads though.
Reddit. One thing they do. It's funny. They have a system called Giving Gold, where basically you can. I actually don't remember what the benefits of having gold are, but it's kind of like a subscription where you pay one time, but you can also give somebody else the gold subscription. So say I think you have a really funny post, I can give you gold. And the funny thing is, it's not like, oh, I already have gold, so you can't give me more. You'll see posts that are really like highly upvoted and they'll be like, they'll give 10 gold. I don't remember.
I know this isn't the strongest model, but do they take donations? I mean, the Wikipedia, that's what they did, right? They just took donations for theirs. I mean, obviously you're not going to.
Nonprofit, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, sure. But I mean.
But it's owned by Condé Nast, so I don't think they're going to. Apparently they're not fully owned. I think they're only partially owned. I don't think they'll do donations. Like, I don't think you can do that from. Wikipedia does it, you know, because of that foundation.
Sure.
So just to clarify, you know, we talk about, how do you monetize free services, but to be clear, we're mostly talking about social networks here. some element of social network. But even with that, I think there are opportunities that just Google haven't
Maps,
been.
Google Maps, you're on your drive, and this is pay now.
Pay now or we'll drive you off the bridge.
But, I mean, there's still opportunities that haven't been explored, right? So you can take the freemium model and say, all right, yeah, there's a small percentage of people who want to be power users on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Let them pay for it, right? Because you know that it's going to be the most reported story in the tech world, if not the regular mainstream news, if Twitter goes down, right? Yeah. Like if Twitter goes out of business, all the reporters will report about it because they use Twitter, right? It's just like in the 90s, everybody was talking about carpal tunnel because all the reporters had carpal tunnel, right? They've actually done a story on this on Freakonomics. Like, there, you know, people were up in arms about carpal tunnel, but it's just turned out that a high percentage of reporters, because they typed a lot, had carpal tunnel. It wasn't a mainstream thing, right? So you report what you see, and you see what you know, right? Or you know what you see, rather. There's opportunities here. They can take a power user approach and have people pay for that subscription. They can do, like Line has been very successful with selling things like stickers and customization packs, right? So they recently took off the custom backgrounds on Twitter. Potentially, they could let you get them back by paying for special themes, or they could still let you do your own custom. They didn't say, but
I didn't understand that.
But you know, when you give something and then take it away, that's very dangerous. So you're right. The focus has been growth for so long, but I think that's to the detriment of their capacity to make money now. Not because they've ignored making money for so long, but because they've potentially prevented themselves from using ideas like, you know, selling skins to your background, official skins to your background. Like, here's the official Transformers skin. Yeah, you can go download a Transformers thing, but now here's the official one for 99 cents. Microtransactions, stuff like that. They've got the buy button coming up.
Twitter.
Lots of opportunities.
Not that they're mutually exclusive, but on that point, since there's obviously a problem with something that was given, taking that away.
So yeah, you can't do that. Free. That's no good.
So the question is, do you think it makes more sense to leverage the business back end, meaning, or not the business back end, but the enterprise side or whatever, the business side, in that you get the companies, here's how you can get to our users, rather than finding a way to charge your users in a way. I mean, like I said, they're not mutually exclusive, but for example, Imgur, there's sponsored posts now. So that's clearly, I mean, there's nothing, you don't pay for anything
to like use Twitter. Imgur. Yeah.
I mean, the huge advantage of that is companies are willing to pay money, and you don't get the negative PR. You still get that user base. But then you have to think about also selling your data, which is something that Google deals with because they're ads-based. And
I think specifically a lot of these platforms, their problem is that they're chasing Facebook's model. And Facebook is mostly ad revenue, and they get a relatively high ad rate from advertisers because they make the claim that they can have highly targeted ads, right?
Yeah.
Because that's kind of the promise of social networks. But I don't think a lot of social networks were actually built to collect this data and analyze it with smart algorithms that say, hey, you should get this ad at any given time. I don't think they're really good at that. Facebook is good at that because you told them when you filled out your profile, I like these things. I'm already in these traditional demographics that advertisers are already comfortable with. On top of that, I said, I like this, I like that. Like physically, you click that button that you say you like something. But in Twitter, how are they going to find out that I like something? I don't even have to tell Twitter my age, right? Mm-hmm. I don't even have to use my real name on Twitter. So they're trying to follow this ad-only model that Facebook has. But Facebook, I mean, they're ignoring the huge advantages, not just user base, but the huge advantages that Facebook has for that kind of advertising model. That's why I think they really need to explore different features.
I mean, why couldn't they do like featured AMAs that you actually have to pay for?
Well, so the way they're doing it, so this isn't how they're monetizing, but they said one thing, they want to make AMAs less of a thing in that the people that they would get to AMAs, make them real Redditors, like make them want to use Reddit on a consistent basis. So it's not just, I did one 5 years ago, I'll do an AMA for one day again. And I don't know how they're going to build that into doing that. they could charge them, but this goes in, and especially, particularly Reddit, you know, they have a very vocal community that can band together when they want to. So if you start paywalling it, I don't know how that will
work. I mean, I don't think
One advantage, though, with subreddits and things like that, think about, you can definitely advertise directly to your base because, you know, build a PC, if Newegg advertises in there, I mean, there are clearly people who are going to buy products.
I don't think there's a way you can do this without pissing off a lot of users. Yeah. Like, you have to.
But there are definitely ways that it can be done that's not, I don't think
that it's not necessarily intrusive, right? So you're not putting a paywall to use the entire thing,
paywall
is
a big stop.
Yeah, you're right.
For example, like I said, Image, you're doing sponsored posts, and they have a huge ban and says this is a sponsored post, but I don't care.
But there's a different, but I mean, since I'm not a user, I don't have a whole lot of, you know, weight behind this, but, you know, paying a subscription to use the site is obviously much different than saying, oh, here's pay a dollar if you want to do the AMA with Obama or something like that.
Yeah. But I think people tend to look at a lot of AMAs and things like that. So I think it'd be hard to do each individual AMA. Like, I don't even know how they would do that pricing model, because then it would just be, I don't know. I don't think that would go down well at all if people do that. And this
then it comes down to ads and data.
Yeah. And
you can still pay for features. You're talking about ads to see content. So I come to see the content and you feed me an ad, or I pay to see the content. But there's still other things. There's features for power users. There are customization tools. There's lots of other options there.
Especially with Reddit, I could see them, you know, just like in video games, having badges or things like that that make your username look different or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because Reddit is all about just plain text links for the most part. But there are definitely places they can explore, but it'll be interesting to see what they want to do, because now they got to figure out what... They can't just keep running on what they're doing right now, but Reddit in particular, I think, is not a community that you can... There aren't enough, I don't know, non-Reddit people that are just exploring Reddit from time to time to really get it to where you can just pass something. Whereas Twitter, there's a lot of people from a lot of different groups that you can... Facebook even more so.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. You know, just so I think I was just thinking of like the pay-per-view model with boxing, right? So some of the challenges that they had. So, well, actually, let's use MMA fighting, right? So MMA fighting didn't exist, because you could argue that boxing existed before it was pay-per-view cable, and people would have, they knew what the product was, right? Like, AMAs didn't really exist before, so they have to. They're in this awkward stage where they have to educate people why they want to see this, but also potentially monetize it, which might prevent some curious people from checking it out. But MMA somehow did that, right? Like, they did it through marketing, promotion, and they knew that they had an interesting product, and eventually people would come along and pay for it, right? So, you know, I think there is some possibility to do that. You just have to look at some maybe non-obvious examples.
I mean, what if you gave ways that Reddit users can make money off of it? Like, I'm spitballing, but like, by starting a thread that you have to pay to subscribe to, and whoever starts the thread gets some, or moderators get some.
Well, so one problem with both of these, and how it's different from something like MMA and things like that, which, by the way, for those who didn't know, AMAs are actually an offshoot of MMA. But, the thing is, Reddit, Twitter, Facebook, they're built purely on community. If you don't have people, then it's pretty much useless. So in the same way, if you gate people, like in these threads and stuff, you might end up limiting the number of people who are there.
Yeah, but it's not just...
You get rid of trolls.
I mean, as these communities flesh themselves out, you know, it's not... Because why do you want people? You want people as an audience, but also as content creation, right?
It's also quality over quantity.
When you get to content creation, it is quality over quantity, and it's already shaken down in Twitter that you have a small cohort of people who are the very strong content creators. When you've got like Ashton Kutcher, you know, he was the first to a million or whatever, and you know, everybody else, Bieber and all these other people, they are the content providers. So make deals with your content providers, and it doesn't have to, those rules don't have to necessarily apply to everybody else, right? So yeah, if I wanted to, I could watch some guys wrestling in their backyard. That's great. or I could go to the gym and watch a fight. But if I want to watch these celebrities, I pay per view. Right.
I'm picturing these professional Redditors. Like, what are you doing?
Are you ready?
Yeah, but it's funny you say that, but you could have said the same thing about YouTube people in the beginning of that.
Yeah.
That's a good transition. Yeah. Like, they've made that switch with their community.
I guess the only difference particularly I'm thinking of Reddit, is since it's communicating back and forth, content creation. So sometimes, like, what is more powerful than the AMA, I think this works well with, but other things, what's more powerful than the starting point is the comments afterwards. I mean, I guess you could have professional commenters, but it's different than content creation because it's not like there's a product
per se. You're right, but I mean, you just hit on it. The AMAs are different.
Yeah,
so start
AMAs
there.
Are an interesting point that, and I don't know, I mean, maybe they'll spin it off and be a separate thing that they could try to make money off of, and Reddit is its own thing otherwise, but I don't know. I guess we'll see.
Well, we just solved the problem, clearly. All right, so that is going to do it for this week's episode of The Unwind. Thank you so much for listening. You can subscribe to us on the iTunes and Stitcher. You can find content on YouTube now, although this is going to be audio because it's too hot and we're melting. Please share us with your friends. Leave us comments. You can submit questions and topics. And we have a new site. We have a new we've rebranded, and we are now The Commentist. So we have...
You can check us out on geocities.com/commentist.
No, don't go there. you can go to thecommentist.com. We are relaunching with 6 shows now, so we are growing quite a bit.
It's all because of you. Thank you for your support.
I know, it's crazy. We got a D&D podcast, one about music, veganism, soccer, and positive mentality. It's a lot of good stuff, a lot of good stuff. So come check us, and we'll see you next week.
It's-a me, Mario.
Nice. It's about time you had a good one.
Oh, yeah, I couldn't think of anything.
Oh, my God, I'm melting. Turn on all the fans. All the fans.
Let's just go in the fridge. Can I take...